The title of the talk tonight is Kindness Makes Sense. Kindness Makes Sense. We're here on a retreat. We stopped the usual running. Some of you may feel it's a bit like this. And we are experiencing and in a way enjoying a refuge, which is a retreat. It's a special way of living. It's not just practice, it's a model of how people can live together differently. And we are practicing meditation as turning to meet our experience. What is our experience? Instead of just reacting in life and being our experience, we are seeing our experience. And in some way or other, taking responsibility for it. And that's the special thing about the Vipassana aspect of meditation, which is to actually see our experience and begin to take responsibility instead of being controlled by our needs and our issues and our wanting to be happy and our fears and all that. Instead of being controlled, we are actually beginning to hold it and take responsibility for it and see the truth of things that arise. And it's very precious. And we see the truth that arises even if the mind is a total cacophonia. That too, that's the truth of things. My mind is a cacophonia. I wish my mind was a symphony of Mozart, but it's a cacophonia. Okay, that's the truth of things. But our much more important, whether it's a cacophonia or a symphony, is that we see eye level, this is my inner world. But a whole other aspect of the practice is cultivation or tipuach. And it always goes together. The seeing goes together with cultivation, development of qualities. And I mentioned yesterday the fourth foundation, Dharma. But in the Dharma is factors of awakening. And these are qualities that we develop during the spiritual life, which bring us to liberation. So a lot of the practice is about developing qualities. Bhavana, in the traditional language, cultivation. Development, tipuach. And it's, yeah, changing things, changing ourselves, yes. A little bit shifting who we are and what's important. And I mean, we've done it already, but we didn't pay so much attention. For example, calming down through connection to the breathing is developing calming, but we didn't call it. We're here to develop calm, because also then it has another side, which is, yes, but I'm not calm. So do I go home? So you have to be aware of that. But still there's a lot of movement towards what is healthy in what we're doing. Kusala in the traditional language. And it's important to be aware of that and not to have a sense that the whole Buddhist path is just about seeing what is. It's half the Buddhist path, even less than half. It's also engaging with who we are and working with the raw material of who we are. And so we do come here, in a way, to change our mind and to change our way of life and to develop other qualities, like being able to feel at home, being able to have more trust, being able to live with more wisdom and clarity. These are powers that we then use in life. What makes the cacophony or the symphony, what drives us and drives our mind all day we're trying to kind of struggle with, is the heart. The heart is the engine that drives the mind. The heart triggers thoughts, concerns, anxieties, fears, stress, endless thinking. The source of that is the heart. The heart is activating the mind. The mind is actually just a kind of mechanism in the brain that is doing what the heart tells it to do. It's just a mechanism of concepts and function. It's the heart that drives the show. The heart creates what is pleasant, what is unpleasant. The heart creates the habits that we have in life. The heart says what we need. The heart says, we're getting there, we're not getting there, success, failure. The heart says, I'm doing well, I'm not doing well, I know what I'm... The heart is always time giving messages. We often don't notice those messages because we're looking at the mind. But the heart is giving those messages all the time. And if we purify the heart, if we work with the heart, the heart energy, the heart messages, we might find that our mind is calm and quieter because we're actually engaging with the heart. The heart doesn't come with its chaotic messages of, it should be like this, it shouldn't be like that, it should be something else, I'm no good, I am good, I'm, you know, all that stuff. And we might find that our mind calms down because the heart is more pure. So friendliness changes, if you like, the inner weather, mezigavir pnimi. The friendliness to ourselves is a fundamental shift and a development of the heart. Just basic friendliness, to be our best friend, is making a big difference to the heart. And it changes the mind and the body. It changes the way we are. It changes the, like I said, the weather, the climate inside our life. And one of the movements, the practices that we're doing, is actually beginning to change the language of the heart. What is the heart saying? Can I sweeten, soften, bring friendliness to the language of the heart? And then lots of things happen because of that, especially changes in the mind. And so in a quote from the Buddha that expresses the importance of this is, he says, there's no better mindfulness in this world. There's no better way to live in this world than the practice of metta. It is a path to awakening. So I want to go into what that means. What is the practice of metta? What is metta? metta or mitra in the Sanskrit is translated into English as loving kindness. That's old translation, not particularly good. Most of the Buddhist texts were translated into English 100 years ago, and the language is still there. Even words like mindfulness are not really good translations, and we need to change them. But another translation of metta would be consistent, constant friendliness. And that's easier to understand. Constant friendliness. Friendliness as a way of life. And it's key is closeness, intimacy, empathy, kind of our ability to dance with and to be close to ourselves and the world. In some way, we've been practicing it already when we're close to the breathing, when we're close to the body. We can't be close to something if we are resisting it, and if we are against it, and if we're thinking it's a mistake, or we're thinking we don't want it. So the whole movement of friendliness is closeness, is intimacy, is being close. And it goes with a deep sense that the world is not against me. The world is not against us. Fundamentally, the world is okay. You may say, but the world is not okay. Look, all the wars and the difficulties and so on. Yeah, indeed, that is the nature of things. There's life and death and the whole lot. But underneath, the world isn't against us. The world is just the world. We are in the world, and it's up to us, our relationship with the world. It's up to how we are. So, metta is the first of four qualities that are similar but slightly different. The color is slightly different. There's metta is this sense of enduring friendliness, of being with, of being intimate, of being close. Karuna, namely compassion, is being close with the sense that there is pain and difficulty. And as we are close to pain and difficulty, it triggers something in our heart, which is the wish for healing, the wish for the ending of pain. It's something very deep in us that we actually, for ourselves and as much as we are close to other beings in the world, we want to reduce suffering. So it's a fundamental closeness and at the same time a sense that we'd like to reduce the suffering. So it's active. Compassion is active. It's an intent. Actually, all of the four Brahma Viharas, like I didn't say what they are, but Brahma Viharas is kind of celestial mansions or celestial palaces in the traditional Indian language. They're heavenly palaces, kingdom of heaven in the Christian language. And why they're heavenly is because the practice with the heart has no measure. They're defined as immeasurable. You can't measure the heart. You can't put a ruler and say it's 10%, 15%. The mind is measuring. The heart doesn't measure. Love cannot be measured. And because of that, they're called immeasurable. They have no way of that. L'oniten, it's not possible to chop them up and measure them and give numbers, and they're immeasurable. They don't have any way to measure them, the four of them. That's why they're called Brahma Viharas. So there's something divine about them, because they're unlimited. So the first is metta, the second karuna, compassion. The third is mudita, which is intimacy again, but the way we respond to joy. When we see a kid playing and happy, especially if it's our kid, we also feel a little bit happy. Something is communicated. Happiness is communicated just like pain is communicated. Actually, everything is communicated. But we are responding to happiness with happiness. We're responding to joy with joy. The same intimacy, and it's responding to happiness. It's the vibration. And the fourth is equanimity, upekkha, which is steadiness. And it's again something big. It's the bigness of things. And a certain steadiness is needed, because the heart needs to be steady. It's like finding our ground. Our ground is also big. It's immeasurable. We can't measure. But it's a sense of the bigness of things. The fact that they are Brahma Viharas, they are divine qualities, the immeasurable nature of them is really important in the practice of them, because they tend to take us beyond our usual limits. Our limits are defined by me, my history, my stories, my biography, all the disasters that happened on the way, all the makot I got from everybody in my life. And we find ourselves in our personality with limits. And then we come to retreat and we want to go beyond the limits. But sometimes not so easy. We feel stuck with, and oh, here I am again. Same me. Oh my God. And we keep finding ourselves up against limits. And the Brahma Viharas, because they are limitless, they can help us go beyond our limits. And that's why one translation in Hebrew that's used is chesed, because chesed is something limitless. In the Tanakh, chesed is like rain. Rain doesn't fall on one person, it falls openly. Doesn't matter whether you're a good person, but, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, rain will fall on you or equally to everybody else. There's something about chesed which is beyond the person, and it has that quality of beyond the person. And because of that, the traditional practice in the suttas, in the Buddhist text, the way the Buddha described the practice is as pure vibration. He described all the practice of the four Brahma Viharas. Firstly, friendliness, no negativity in the heart, being for, being with, and then vibration, spreading vibration to the world. Again, beyond the self, beyond limits, the shader. Tedra universali, you could say. In the Indian tradition, om, the vibration of the universe. The Buddha taught specifically in the text, spreading the four Brahma Viharas, all of them, as a vibration, and the vibration going in all directions. Up and down and front and back, to everybody, to all people, to all animals, to the planet itself, to the sky above and the earth beneath. There are no limits. And there's something there that's very beautiful about the limitless nature of the heart. And it really is inspiring. We practiced it here in little bits right from the beginning. And all the time, Simi and myself have been giving suggestions. When I was guiding walking meditation, I just reminded Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful poetic language, when you walk, kiss the earth. That's poetic language for metta, for kindness, for connection, for intimacy, for being for kissing the earth. And its power is because it takes the place of other feelings. So as much as we can fill the heart with friendliness, with love, with intimacy, with empathy, with caring, the voices of anxiety, of pressure, of stress, of worry, of anger, of frustration, will get less. Doesn't mean they won't be there, but we fill the heart with something else. We replace other feelings, and that's important. Still, the heart is out of control, and it's no guarantee. And it could be that, you know, we suggest kindness, and the heart says, "Bullshit. I don't agree. I'm going to be angry. I don't want this sweet stuff. I want a bit of pilpul kharif." And we get angry. And we might get angry because we're told to be nice. It's really okay. It's the heart being out of control. It's all right. It's still engaging with the heart. It's still saying, okay, the heart is reacting like that, but kindness kindness behind, kindness is there. Kindness is a reminder that the heart can be there, and the heart might react against, but slowly, slowly, it changes. The image that I remember from Goenka retreats is that metta is like cool water on a hot plate. The hot plate is the heart. And at the beginning, the cool water of metta will touch the hot plate and it will go psh, like that. There'll be a reaction, anger, no, I don't agree, etc., etc. But slowly, slowly, the drip after drip after drip, and I think it's an image that Simi used today, it gets softer. The heart gets softer and the reactions get less. So it needs patience, like everything we practice. It's not an instant thing. But one thing that happens that supports it is that we begin to look at things differently, and we get support in daily life from that. If we smile at somebody, we are likely to get a smile back. If we look at a child with kindness, the child brings back the kindness. We see the eyes of a child and something comes back to us. We go to difficult places with a different attitude of kindness. We may get back. No guarantee, because karma is not in our, we're not in control, but we may get back the same energy that we give out from the heart. We may get it back. We may get the echo from life. I want to give a couple of examples. In Klil, sometimes I'm running or walking, and I meet a whole pack of dogs. And they're running about, and sometimes five or six dogs. And first, they might start barking. So I always use metta, and I talk to them with metta. But I talk to them. I don't run away. I don't go. I go to them with some kindness, and I'm waiting. Which one is wagging its tail? But it tends to work. It tends to work. I feel it, something there is softened. Dogs love metta. You don't have to do so much, and the dog wags its tail, you know, super fast, just because you're in a way beaming kindness to the dog. Straight away, the dog catches it. Huh? They're very, very sensitive to energy of kindness, and straight away the tail responds, and you see, oh yeah, I'm getting it back. I'm giving kindness, and the dog gives it back to me. And I think maybe all beings wag their tails when we offer kindness. And we can shift the view again and again and again, 1,000 times. We can shift the view of where we are of difficulty. I mean, just a small example I mentioned, I remembered today, and I mentioned it in the group. Just some time back, I took one of my grandchildren who wanted to go shopping in a big canyon arena in the Haria. I do my best never to go there. Huge shopping center, a world of mamash netek. And she was trying to buy absolute rubbish somewhere. And it went on and on. And I was sitting there in the middle of this crazy place. Someone in my group said Babylon, that it was Babylon. I was sitting there and I began to feel, just, I don't want to be in this place. This is, and I was waiting for ages. After 45 minutes, my granddaughter still hadn't come back. And I needed to be rescued. And all of a sudden, I realized my negativity. I realized, and I said, no, this is not a good attitude right now. It had come underneath somehow. And I just sat down. Actually, I think I sat on the floor and said, here I am. I'm at home. Here I am. But it changes situations constantly in life. Again, no guarantee. There is absolutely no guarantee that if you give metta, you will get back kindness. You might get back makot. No guarantee, because life doesn't work like that. I remember very powerful experiences. For years, we did peace walks, Halichot L'Shalom, through Jerusalem, Jews and Arabs. Through Jerusalem, through Tel Aviv, through Kibbutzim. We did twice walking from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, 8 days, through all kinds of, and all the time, quietness and kindness. And the people that don't, they're not especially Buddhists. They were Palestinian young people or old people, often led by a Bedouin sheikh. But the message we walk and we radiate kindness to everybody. It doesn't matter. Someone shouts against us, kindness. A dog passes by, kindness. And we really did get back so much appreciation from old ladies in the street in Jerusalem that says, wow, you people are the future. You're beautiful. We really got back beautiful things and some shouts. But the message of radiate kindness as a way to create a different atmosphere. And that was it. Because of that, it was a peace walk. So many, many memories of this kind of, it works in life. It's just another way, rather than the constant sense of confrontation and conflict. But our problems are when we meet the issues in us. And how do we really bring kindness to the demons, the shedim that we have in our souls, in our memories? And in many ways, kindness is one of the tools that we can use to meet our difficulties inside. The old image of, you know, in the mythology of kissing the frog, Menasheketa Tzvardeya, and it becomes a prince or princess, because we kiss the demon. And there's a beautiful line from Rilke: every demon is a demon because it needs our love. As soon as the demon receives love, it cannot be a demon anymore. There is a story that I heard about a king who went away, and he was in his palace, and a demon came and sat on the king's chair, the seat of the king, Kise Kavod. And all the court started to shout, "Get off that chair!" And it got bigger. "You horrible, stinky demon!" Got bigger. "You disgusting, get off the you. And it got bigger and bigger. And the more they were angry with it, the more they tried to get rid of it, the more they cursed it, it began to fill the whole palace with this. And then the king came back, saw this huge demon sitting on his chair, came to the demon and said, "Ah, hi, you want a cup of tea?" Demon, a little bit less. I want to talk to you. What happened in your life? A bit less. Let's sit together and hang out together. A bit less. And the more kind that the king was to the demon, the more it shrunk and shrunk and eventually disappeared. So our pain, our conditioned mind, are those demons. And one very effective way of meeting our pain and meeting our conditioned mind is with our love. And it's an addition to everything we've been talking about, which is the model of seeing and working with and dissolving and letting them pass by. So that it goes together. They go together. The two go together. So in the retreat here, and in general in the practice of metta, practice of karuna, of compassion, we don't go too far too fast, because it has to touch us. And not so easy to talk in the language of love, for example, because love is such a big word. And so we start talking about love from the Bama here, and people want to leave the room. Don't talk to me about love. It's too much. But yes, we can talk about appreciation. We can talk about a moment of gratitude. We can talk about a moment of feeling good with other people, a moment of feeling how we're being looked after in this, we can have relationship with the trees and the earth and the beauty of Ein Dor. And small things is where we start. So it's a gradual process. It starts with listening to the song of the birds outside. It starts to listening to the joyful thoughts in us. It starts by remembering, I used to play as a child with, I used to plant in the garden when I was a kid. Joyful thoughts, pleasant thoughts, interesting thoughts, kind thoughts. Start with small things like that. And then we'll keep finding resistance. So I can be kind to this one, but over there, no. I can't be kind to them. I can't be kind to those. Anim ircha kodmim. I can be okay with these, but not those. And it's just to be seen, not to feel guilty that I can't be kind to those, but to realize that our job is to spread that boundary bit by bit and to say, okay, I can move the boundary of my kindness a little bit more. I can be kind to Bituch Lumi when I go there. I can be kind to strangers in the street, but I can't be kind to them. They're problematic for me. Okay, don't force it, but do be, our responsibility is to remove the boundary and to work with resistance to kindness, to meet the resistance and to move it a bit every time. And that's the practice. It's a traditional practice. It's well established. It's been hundreds of years. That sense of moving the boundary of the limits of our love. Yes to strangers. Yes to them. And this movement, gamze, gam. I be kind also to them, also to this, also to that difficulty, also to these shedim, these demons. Come, yes, you too. So there is a practice that it's very honest, this practice. We are not trying to dress it all up. We will meet our resistance and we'll move the resistance a little bit. I can be kind up to here, but not there. That's fine. Stay there. Be there with that. Love is developed through overcoming resistance. Just like we can't walk without resistance. We move through resistance. And that's how we develop. The phrases that you heard today can be helpful triggers. We don't have to use them, but they can sometimes be helpful as a reminder to the heart, as a trigger to the heart. Yes, you can go there, telling the heart, because phrases are strong and clear as a kind of instruction. Be happy. Simplest phrase, be happy. But it works, especially if we're not happy. And suddenly we can say, yeah, be happy. It reminds the heart there's another place to be. And because it's language, it can be quite strong and effective. It reminds the heart. And the language creates movement, which you could call a movement to healing. Because metta is active and karuna, compassion, is active. If we apply metta and karuna, it makes a change. So, for example, something in our body hurts. Taking a very simple example, something is tense in our body. We direct compassion to it. We say, I am with you. I am close to you. Be happy and peaceful. I'm holding you, and something in that pain will change. And healing happens through intention, through compassion, through kindness. we can't expect that if we say, if we are, you know, direct kindness to someone that is sick and that needs, we can't expect that there will be a change. It's not a kind of mechanical thing, like a kind of taking Acamol, but it does make change in the world. Metta and Karuna, it makes change in the world in one way or another. And we can notice what sort of change it makes. I want to read a poem. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weak soup. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate means muznach, is the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow, you must speak to it, till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to find bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for. And then it goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. And it's written by Naomi Shihab Nia. She's a Palestinian poet living in America. Kindness makes sense. Allow yourself to be very individual about especially the practice of metta. It's very much individual. Each of you can find your way with it. The phrases you choose will be the ones that talk to you, or you don't choose a phrase but you just are with the vibration of kindness, or the way you do it, it really is quite individual. And because the heart is, like I say, is wild. And but underneath metta connects us to life. And that's why it, when the Buddha said it's a liberating practice, that's what he meant. Just like every meditation, every spiritual practice brings us to connect with life, takes us out of self-centeredness into a sense of being with all of life, merging with life, hitmasgut, being, belonging with life. And metta does it as much as the wisdom aspect. And that's why the two are together. They practice and they fit each other. And you find in your own practice here and also in your home that the two can work together very beautifully. Metta and awareness practice work very beautifully together. There is the image of the Garuda. Garuda is a Tibetan bird, Tibetan image bird. And the two wings of the Garuda are exactly that, the wisdom and the heart. But the interesting thing about the Garuda is it's born ready-made. It's born, it comes from the egg fully adult and flies. And the reason is that enlightenment is seen as ready. In this case, the image is, you're right there already. Your enlightenment is already there. It's not something that doesn't exist. It exists in us. It's already there. And that's the image of Garuda. So, final word, any phrases, any poems, any memories, any messages that we get from our childhood, from each other, from the cats that we see in outside, from the leaves falling from the tree, from the moon outside, all the messages going in the same direction of I am with, I am for, we are together, my heart is open. Let it talk to you. Let the world invite your heart to be open. Thank you. So I'll take a couple of minutes of quiet.